I normally show a picture of the view out my window and the Oregon Mountains, but this is a little different presentation, so I'm showing you a little different picture. And I have a purpose here, besides just we thinking it's kind of funny, but you think about equipment development. Equipment development goes in spurts, and everybody has a little bit different idea. And I'm sure those engineers in the audience here could suggest a few improvements to this transportation system. However, you might notice this fellow and these people are all smiling. The ox doesn't seem to be. Nobody asked that. But it meets a need. Regardless of how we may look at that, equipment development meets a need, and it goes forward. And it may not look the way we, looking back, the way it looks looking forward. I want to take you over about 4,500 years in about two slides. Cotton, as far as we know, was at least grown at least 2,500 B.C., probably before that, but we don't know for sure. And with cotton being grown, there was cotton ginning. Now, this slide right here that I'm going to show you is a video that was taken within the last year in Mali, and it's a stone gin. And the stone ginning operation and the entire textile industry is really in this picture that you'll see. Here's the stone gin. It's a flat stone with a rod. You'll see a lady carding over here, and then there's some other things going on here. But just watch this. It runs about 50 seconds. There's seed cotton. See that nice batch she's making? Here's the seed right here that have come off. And here she's preparing, doing a little seed cotton cleaning there. Here comes the seed. There it is. This lady is doing the carding. We don't even talk about OSHA and carpal tunnel syndrome and all that kind of stuff. Back here is the after carding. You can see this is not, these are spindles. I'm assuming they're going to go to a spinning wheel or something. That's loose fiber. But this is an effective way of ginning. It makes a product. Nice, clean, beautiful textiles are the result of that. I don't really know. I think it looks fuzzy to me. I think it's a fuzzy type. But nevertheless, there is ginning. Now, that kind of ginning went on for a number of thousand years. Nobody really knows for sure. Whoops, I didn't mean to do that. Somewhere after the time of Christ, there was an improvement in ginning. This is a Churka gin. This picture was taken about 3 years ago in Laos. And so this type of ginning is still going on. Here's a lady sitting here. Seed cotton fed in this side, fiber goes out the back, lint drops out the front. Now, what you may notice here so far in all this ginning, it's all been women doing it. So obviously sometime in our history, we needed something a little simpler to operate that a man could do. And so that's what came next. This is a picture. This is an original copy of a patent done in 1796. This is not Whitney's patent. This is Henry Ogden Holmes. You might notice down here it was signed by George Washington. It's dated. You really probably can't see it, but it's dated in May 1796. You also may notice we have a new government, and by gosh, here's a form to fill in. Look at here. We have a government form. So nothing really changes. But what I do want to show here is that Whitney gets the credit. Holmes did file a patent. This is what Whitney actually produced, and it's really based on Holmes's patent. I owe my good friend Bill Mayfield for some of these slides that you're going to see here. Here's the gin saw, here's the doffing brush, here's the seed roll, and here's this guy. We got a man doing it now. He can handle it, feeding the seed cotton into the gin. And these then, the ginning industry, as we would recognize it, was off and running in the United States around 1800. Here's a refurbished or a gin that probably dates from the 1830s, 1840s, and this basically is the kind of gin that was produced under this patent of Holmes. Here's the bale press. A gin was pretty much, and here's a cross-section. This is out of a Munger catalog in 1899. This is that gin. This gin pretty much for 100 years or so ginned a lot of the cotton in the United States. Here's the gin stand. Here's the bale press. And you might notice there's seed cotton storage has always been an issue. Managing the crop has always been an issue. Some of these things never change. This is, but I see six horses in the picture. That's a six horsepower gin. Now, around the turn of the century, around in 1898 in Mahaya, Texas, This is a Munger gin. They gin 300 bales right here. You can see on the roof, 300 bales daily capacity. Well, you figure that out, and there are 15 gin stands in there. If they ran a 24-hour day, that's less than one bale per hour per stand. So we would look at that and say, you know, that's pretty slow, pretty antiquated. But again, you look at this picture, everything's represented here that's in a modern-day gin, including the office. There's the office, and I bet you there's a coffee pot on the stove in there somewhere. So here's the largest gin in Texas, which is probably, being Texas, it's the largest gin in the country at the turn of the century. Now, some numbers. Being engineers, we always like numbers. When Whitney filed his patent, there were 11,000 bales per year being produced in the United States. By 1907, 11 million bales and about 27,000 gins. Average gin production, 400 or so bales per season. And we've seen this as we go through the number of gins decrease, even though production goes up and down. By the way, 1967, the year I graduated from high school, was a very low point in the ginning, in the cotton production industry. And some of you may remember those years and why, but different reasons than maybe now. But nevertheless, and there was sort of a plateau for a number of years. Our production really didn't change a lot. Gins kept going down until we're up to this time frame. So what I really want to do is kind of examine these last 100 years or so in some detail, and as gin machinery is being developed. Here's a 1920s gin. This happens to be a Lummis from a Lummis brochure, and pretty basic. It's called the automatic outfit. And of course, automatic is really relative. There's a lot of labor went into running this gin. Central power, belt drive, everything off of one power supply, probably a steam engine. Here's a seed cotton cleaning. You have the telescope unloading the cotton, bringing it into seed cotton cleaning. Pretty minimal. Four stands, bale press. There's your basic gin, 1920s. Here's a cross-section of what that machinery looked like. Less, of course, the bale press isn't here. This happens to be an air blast gin stand, you might notice here. But pretty basic system, but it does all the things we do today. Opens cotton, cleans it, feeds it to the gin stand, goes and sends it to the press. Now, I want to follow. I could go a lot of different areas with equipment. I could talk all morning about ginning equipment that's being developed for various reasons. But I'll focus on the gin feeder, as that's a very important part of the ginning industry, and just talk about that a little bit. Here's the John E. Mitchell 1912 Model A feeder. You look at this, it's pretty simple. There's one, two, three, four, five, about six cylinders in this thing. Fairly simple design, mostly wood, some steel, 12 bearings. There's a number of models in between, but we go to 1920, and you can see this is the Model E. Obviously, there's several in between. There's now 11 cylinders, a little more elaborate. They want to do a little more cleaning, basically. They want to open that cotton a little better, and these are just a continuing development. Go to 1930, here's the Model K. Cast iron construction, about 14 cylinders. Again, obviously a lot of engineering went into this machine alone. Then we go all the way up to 1939, just before the war. Here's the super unit, rightly so. As you can see, it's a lot bigger. We're up to about 18 cylinders of one kind or another. And again, there were a lot of intermediate types. Now, this is just one machine, and that you could, even looking at feeders alone, you could go on a long time looking at the different types, the different reasons, what they were trying to do. But John E. Mitchell is pretty representative of what was going on in that era as far as continually improving the gin operation, one machine at a time or systems at a time. Now, other things were going on in that same time frame. Here's a cross-section of a cotton gin. 1929 is the date on this. The patent was filed in 1928, but this was published at that time. You might notice here at the ginning point, there's a rotating cylinder to do something, probably to keep the seed roll moving a little better or clear out this area. And here's a detail of that. People were thinking all the time on how to improve the system. Here's a cross-section or a picture of a ginner, gin stand and feeder. With improved enclosed machine-cut gears running in oil, all kinds of improvements being done. Now, 1932, there was a patent issued that changed the ginning system a little bit, and it was here. It's called the Government Vertical Cotton Dryer. This is a patent machine developed at the Stoneville Ginning Lab, And when the dryer was developed, they simply just added it onto the outside of the building. The reason the dryer was developed, of course, is moisture. This is all still hand-picked cotton. They needed to manage moisture better, do a better job of cleaning inside the gin, so the dryer was developed. And here is a cut. This is a cross-section. You notice the inside of the gin still looks about the same as it did 30 years before this, except they just put the dryer on the outside. When you're doing everything pneumatically, you just run the pipes a little bit differently. Nothing else much changed. But just like anything else, as soon as something has been developed, somebody tries to improve it. Here's a Boardman dryer, cotton coming in at the top. There's a rotating shaft with screens up here, a steel disc revolving to probably slow down and clean, and here's an improved dryer. Highest drying efficiency are claims for this, and government improved, so it's got to be good. Now, I love the name of this machine here, the Never Choke Bowl Breaker. Ginners are always optimistic. But when you look down here at the claims to this bowl breaker, there's a lot of things in here that we would recognize. It says never over 170 degrees drying, does not parch the fibers, and it says here conditions wet or damp cotton speeds up ginning, etc. Improves grade down in here, and also this one's government approved too. Government approves have been approving a lot of these things, but there's a continual through the history of ginning of doing a better job and doing it quicker. And things were not necessarily always big, even during this time. Here's just a showing a small gin stand. These are 16, 18, 20 saw sizes used for plantation gins or cotton breeders or those kind of things still being produced. The bale presses that were available reflect the different size of gins. Here's a large press for the larger ginning outfits. And also here's a small one bale press that had a screw tramper on it, probably was capable of doing a few bales a day, that was also being manufactured during that same time. Now, it's interesting as you look at the peripheral equipment that goes with the gin, how it's part of a whole management system. Here we see a Continental Class C unloader. We still have to want to manage the crop, and you can see a cutaway here of the different stalls. We still want to get harvest out of the field. They wanted to get harvest out of the field as quickly as possible. Yet the gin was kind of a bottleneck, so you had to do something about that. So people worked on that management. The power units and the fans, there's a lot of information on that, and we could go on a lot about that, but we'll just kind of skip through that. But there were a lot of different people in that area. Of course, just the housing itself, this is a Luma steel building from the 1920s, more efficient buildings. A lot of thought went into the design of that building, how to operate and manage a crop. And I think, you know, technical expertise is always important in the ginning industry. Here's the Murray Traveling Engineers at your call. What ginner would not feel confident to have this fellow showing up at his door when he had a problem? So I think, technology is important. Research is important. Here's a just one page out of a report in 1945 looking at the gin stands of the time and how do you rate a very loose seed roll, loose roll, normal roll, or a tight roll. This was related to fiber quality and how you could manage your gin stand to produce a better quality. Okay, here's back to the numbers and years again. Now, Ray used a little bit different number for the picker. I happen to use 1947 as kind of one of those times for the picker. We can see cotton production about 11 million or so bales, 8,000 some gins, and out came Old Red, as Ray's already talked about. Now, I don't want to dwell on that. He covered that very well, but I do want to keep in mind as we went from hand to machine harvesting, that profoundly affected the gin. Things had to happen in order to process a cotton and process our cotton to be high quality. Here's a gullet brochure, 1949. You'll notice here they do have a dryer internally, but the picker's not yet impacted them yet. They really haven't changed their overhead or anything else that we might expect to be in a modern gin today. In 1946, here's another shot, Continental gin. Now, this happens to be a different way of drying, but again, the picked cotton really hasn't hit this hit this gin design, and so it really hasn't reacted yet. Also, but we were stripping cotton in Texas, as Ray pointed out, and here's just across the Big Burr separator that was being manufactured by Hardwick Eder Company in the 1940s was there to handle some of that stripper and snapped cotton that was going on. Okay, here's as we started responding to picked cotton, one of the big deals in, differences was the amount of trash that came in. And of course, as ginners, you know that to handle trash, you've got to have the proper moisture. And in 1955, there was the amount of crop that was machine harvested is about 23%. Here's the Hinckley Master Cotton Conditioning Unit that was for drying and cleaning, and it was a response, starting to respond. And you can see this is quite a huge, large machine with a lot of different parts. But it has electric thermostats, all automatic, easy to operate is the claim. So it's in response to a lot of the things that are going on. They started changing the system. Here's the Dixie Bell Group. This is a Lummis design. This happens to be a sort of a modular thing. You can bypass all or none of this. Here's another one, Hardwick Eder design. Of course, the feeders still continue to change. 1957, a cross section of the gin that were prevalent at the time. Then something else happened, and I want to give Don Van Dorn in the audience here had a lot to do with the development of the Superjet right here. We started looking at lint cleaning in gins. This is all primarily seed cotton cleaning up to this point, very little lint cleaning. But their lint cleaning started with the Superjet. We got a lot of other things. Machines were still being developed. Drying was still being developed. All kinds of conditioners and dryers to get a better product to the gin stand. Heaters were being examined. Moisture control was important, the Fiber-Rite. We even looked at tech sprays for better improved ginning mechanical picking. And then Moss Gordon came on the scene with their lint cleaner. Again, a profound effect on the industry. At this time, when Moss Gordon developed their released their lint cleaner, and is prior to 1960, I think, a little bit, but middling cotton was about 4 to 5% trash in the standard box. After the saw lint cleaner, it went down to less than 2% in the grade box. Everybody had to have one of these. I had the opportunity to visit with John Gordon one afternoon at the Lubbock Gin Show a number of years back, and he talked about what went on. He was really the marketing. Ennis Moss was really the engineer, as I understand it. But he talked about what went on in the industry. You know, in a matter of 2 or 3 years, the whole industry had, everybody either had one of these or they were out of business, just from the fact that grades that came out of the machine. I know I'm out of time, a lot of other things going on at this time. 1960s, here's the cross-section of a gin at that time. Spraying water on cotton is nothing new. Hearst was doing it a long time ago and others before that. 1976, when I came to the gin lab, that was the ginning system at the time. Pretty normal ginning system. Then along came this. Again, a profound change in the ginning system. We had to move them. We moved them further than we ever have before. Gin numbers, because of some of this, have gone down to 830 or so, still harvesting and ginning more cotton than we ever have before. 2007, this is a cross-section of the ginning system that we pretty much are using now. A module feeder, drying, we recognize all the way through to the bale and UD bale system. What happens next? I don't know. Roller ginning I haven't even covered. You've heard a little bit about high-speed roller ginning that's been developed at our lab. You've heard about the new harvesting picking systems that are going on. All kinds of things are on the horizon. I don't know what the future system's going to be. Now, Larry the Cable Guy may have popularized it, but the cotton gin system always said, get her done. That's the end. Thank you.